Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
BRI celebrates 15 years of conservation research in the Trans-Pecos. 2022-2023 academic year marks the 15-year anniversary of Borderlands Research Institute, which was launched at Sol Ross State University in the fall of 2007, a press release detailed. Since then, the organization has been a key player in collaborative wildlife research in the Trans-Pecos while offering meaningful graduate programs for students enrolled in the Natural Resource Management Program at Sol Ross. The mission of the Borderlands Research Institute is to conserve the natural resources of the Chihuahuan Desert Borderlands through research, education, and outreach. A major component of that mission entails supporting graduate students as they work on various wildlife and habitat projects. Wildlife studies cover many species, including desert, bighorn sheep, mule deer, pronghorn, kit foxes, black bears, mountain lions, grassland birds, hummingbirds, small mammals, and more. Research also includes the study of wildlife habitat, livestock, and rangeland relationships. The goal of these projects is to learn more about the wildlife in the Big Bend region, including about their diets, factors influencing their survival, the boundaries of their range, habitat selection, and interspecies overlap. 15 years ago, there wasn't any organizations dedicated to this kind of work in the Trans-Pecos. Dr. Lewis A. Haverson, who is the Dan Allen Hughes Jr. Endowed Director and founder of BRI, as well as the newly appointed Associate Provost of Research and Development at Sol Ross, recalls seeing an opportunity for this type of institute at the university when he was a new hire almost 25 years ago. Haverson first arrived to teach in the Natural Resource Management Program at Sol Ross as a young PhD graduate of the Caesar Kleberg Wildlife Research Institute based in South Texas. Of all places in the state, the Trans-Pecos, with its intense variety of wildlife and vast landscapes, makes for the most compelling outdoor research laboratory, Haverson stated in the press release. I was inspired by the Caesar Kleberg Wildlife Research Institute model and began thinking about what the possibilities might be for a similar organization in West Texas. Sol Ross State University is surrounded by significant state-managed lands, including Elephant Mountain and Black Gap Wildlife Management Areas, and Big Bend Ranch State Park, Texas's largest state-managed park, plus Big Bend National Park along the border. But most importantly, ranchers have been actively managing large tracts of ranch land for livestock production and hunting for many generations. There was clearly a need for science-based wildlife and land management research dedicated to this region. All the ingredients were here to build a successful wildlife research organization, Haverson stated in the press release. With the support of the administration at Sol Ross State University, the Borderlands Research Institute was born. It was a natural expansion of long-lasting partnerships between private landowners and the Natural Resource Management Program at Sol Ross and cooperating state, federal, and non-governmental organizations that were already in place. Since then, those relationships have blossomed. Chairman of the BRI Advisory Board, Dan Allen Hughes Jr., has been involved since day one. What attracted him to the organization was its ability to address important wildlife issues at the landowner's level. Other parts of Texas had resources available to landowners regarding wildlife and habitat management, and there was a need for that in West Texas. Hughes grew up as an active hunter and outdoorsman all over Texas and has held leadership positions in a variety of organizations, including as chairman of the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission. His family stewards a ranch in West Texas in Culberson County, and while developing a management program for the wildlife there, he wondered what the home range was for mule deer bucks. No one in West Texas had a clear answer. Enter the Borderlands Research Institute. BRI researchers conducted one of the most comprehensive studies on mule deer using the latest technology in tracking collars to follow the animals for 5 years. The results showed a much larger home range than was expected, approximately 15,000 acres on average for adult males. Some bucks would roam for as many as 20 to 30 miles before returning. The record of sound peer-reviewed research established by BRI, as well as the organization's successful growth trajectory, prompted Sol Ross State University to appoint Harvison as Associate Provost of Research and Development, a campus-wide position. The position promotes, facilitates, and supports research, education, scholarly work, creative services, outreach activities, and external funding relevant to the research centers and institutes at Sol Ross. Midland College hosts Midland Arts Association juried exhibition. Midland College's McCormick Gallery announced on Monday that it will host works by local artists during the fall 2022 Midland Arts Association juried exhibition. The exhibit hangs August 13 through November 11. The public is invited to the opening reception and awards presentation from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. October 13th. Admission is free. The McCormick Gallery is located in the Allison Fine Arts Building on the main Midland College campus, located at 3600 North Garfield Avenue. The gallery is open from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Fridays. Each year we look forward to hosting this exhibit, Dagan Sharman, Midland College art professor, stated in the press release. There is always a wonderful variety of art, watercolors, pastels, oils, ceramics, and printmaking pieces. It is truly amazing that a city the size of Midland has so many talented artists. Today's deaths for Tuesday, October 4th. Sue Ann Roeder. Sue Ann Roeder, 59, died Monday, October 3rd in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Joy Annette Dickman. Joy Annette Dickman, 64, of Gardendale, died Tuesday, September 27th, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 1 p.m. October 4th in American Heritage Funeral Home. Pastor Chris Hager is officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Hi. This is Jack. I'm reading Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, October 4th, 2022, Education section. MISD streamlines GT application process. MISD has streamlined the process to make it easier for parents to nominate their students for enrollment in Carver Center or inclusion in secondary programs for students that have been identified as gifted and talented. This year, applications can be submitted for students for all grades during the month of October. Applications are accepted from all public, private, charter, and homeschool students that live in the MISD attendance zone. Applications can be completed and submitted via Apply Midland by visiting midlandisd.net/apply. This new format simplifies the application and nomination process for all families, particularly those with students in more than one grade, Judy Bridges said in a press release. Once the students are tested, those who have applied and are identified for GT will be contacted for next steps. Every nominated student will be screened for inclusion in the GT program. Please note that the application window will close October 31st. MISD is hosting information sessions for parents over the next 2 weeks to learn more about the nomination process. Each session begins at 5:30. We are excited for parents to come visit Carver Center for those informational sessions and learn about our program. Stephanie Carnett said, Carver Center is a first through sixth grade campus that is the signature program for elementary, gifted, and talented students at Midland ISD. This application process is required for students wishing to attend Carver Center. For additional information or to nominate a student, parents should visit midlandisd.net/advancedacademics. Information sessions about GT programming. Each session begins at 5:30 p.m. Elementary grades K through 5, Tuesday through Thursday, Carver Center Auditorium, 1300 East Wall. Secondary grades 6 through 11, October 10th through 12th, MISD Service Center, 615 West Missouri Avenue. Teacher seeks funds for chair pockets. Mrs. Sowell, a pre-kindergarten through second grade teacher at Long Elementary, is seeking multi-pocket chair pockets for her students to improve organization and learning. The post expires on October 27th, and there is still $400 needed to fully fund the organizers. They will reach 22 students. The post states these chair pockets will give each student an organized space for their pencils, water bottles, scissors, glue, and other necessities. This will allow Sowell's classroom to spend more time learning and building classroom relationships rather than trying to find lost items. The product, Really Good Stuff Store, more multi-pocket chair pockets, online at donorschool.org/project/controlled-cooperative-chaos 653-2971. Abbott taps Secret Service agent as head of security at Texas schools. Governor Greg Abbott appointed a Dallas-area U.S. Secret Service agent to oversee Texas school safety efforts. John Scott, who previously served as assistant special agent in charge of the North Texas District, as well on the North Texas Cyber Fraud Task Force and Protective Intelligence and Physical Protection Unit, started the job Monday. Chief Scott's wealth of experience in security and intelligence and exemplary service to our nation makes him the perfect fit as the new Chief of School Safety and Security. In June, following this year's massacre at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Abbott directed the Texas Education Agency to create the position of Chief of School Safety and Security. Scott will serve as the agency's resident expert on security and public safety issues and oversee Texas schools' implementation of related policies. The position was among initiatives undertaken in the wake of the Uvalde tragedy that left 19 children and two teachers dead. Other efforts include the agency's new guidance that requires school districts to undergo intruder detection and safety audits.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, October 1, 2022. Viewpoints. Does the reliance on partnerships, for specifically parks, send a message the community doesn't trust the city to handle the operations on its own? Lori Merritt Blong, mayoral candidate. Better outcomes happen when inviting others to have voice. Private-public partnerships have proven to be very beneficial to the city of Midland and our residents. They save taxpayer dollars and help us move forward with infrastructure and quality of life projects which we could not otherwise afford. The private sector, in most cases, completes projects and initiatives faster and more efficiently than any form of government. Working together, we can continue to deliver projects and services that benefit our entire city without overburdening our taxpayers. Private-public partnerships are force multipliers for communities to optimize dollars spent, to allow us to keep the municipal budget as conservative as possible while still advancing initiatives for the needs of the community. This is not the only funding solution, certainly, but it is a beneficial and needed component of responsible fiscal management of the city budget. We know the Permian Basin is home to the most secure and well-proven oil-producing basin in the world, We also know our community is home to some of the most hardworking, entrepreneurial, charitable, and fiscally responsible people in the world. In the past few years, as the industry in Midland has experienced economic prosperity, opportunities have come up for local businesses and philanthropic foundations to invest in private-public projects that benefit our entire community. Notable partnerships include Pioneer Natural Resources, Water Reclamation Facility, Downtown Park Conservancy, Centennial Park, Conjo Resources, Parking Garage, I-20 Wildlife Preserve and Jenna Welch Nature Study Center, Permian Basin Bicycle Association, Midland Bike Park, Lofts Parking Garage, Midland Quality of Space Conservancy, Hogan Park, In Process, Maybe Water Resources, Non-Potable Water. It is important to note that this list of partnerships represents a broad range of priorities for our community, from water reuse and efficiency projects to quality of life and parks projects. In each of these cases, the leaders of philanthropy and business have partnered with the city to provide the capital for the initial project and are still partnering long-term for the maintenance and operation of the project. With successful collaboration at work, these partnerships show us that we arrive at better outcomes when we invite others to the table, to pool resources and ideas, and to accomplish a greater outcome than any one of us could accomplish alone. For example, I am thankful that the technology exists to reclaim our effluent water from the City of Midland to be used in well completions projects, thereby preserving our precious fresh water. But the expense of the water reclamation facility should not be borne by the taxpayers of Midland alone. Pioneer and the city, in partnership together, have solved a problem neither could have solved separately. The Midland Bike Park is a wonderful example of a private-public partnership which cost the taxpayer $0. Jack Ladd and I partnered together with the Permian Basin Bicycling Association and other corporate sponsors to take an unutilized parcel of city land and develop it into a fabulous mountain bike park and facility for walkers, runners, and frisbee golf enthusiasts. The city alone could not have developed this property at no cost to the taxpayer. Again, collaboration at work to the benefit of us all. The very nature of the oil and gas industry, which undeniably drives our local economy, is built on pooling resources out of the ground and marketing them for profit. It is right and good that the same companies which are producing value out of our land would then choose to invest back into our community. Private industry most always functions more efficiently, quickly, and economically than government can function on its own. As mayor, I will leverage my own business experience to diligently pursue partnerships, making sure that the initial capital investment also considers the long-term added costs of maintenance and operation. Just because we can build a multi-million dollar project does not always mean that we can afford it for the long haul. I believe this critical facet of long-term cost is one of the biggest potential risks of private-public partnership, and I know that I can bring the needed business perspective to the table to plan for and control those costs. We are blessed to have successful companies and philanthropically minded leaders in our community who are willing to give back to Midland. When we invite successful businesses to invest back into Midland, we improve the quality of life for all residents and improve our ability to attract and retain talent for our workforce. As mayor, I will work to identify appropriate opportunities for private-public partnerships, to develop projects to move Midland forward, to drive efficiency with our taxpayer dollars, and to keep our taxes low. In collaboration with the Permian Strategic Partnership, the other taxing entities, foundations, and businesses, we can protect taxpayers and accomplish so much more together. I ask for your vote for Lori Blong for Mayor of Midland. Jerry Morales, mayoral candidate. Private partner involvement lessens budget constraints. A public-private partnership, PPP, is an agreement usually creating a lasting relationship between a private partnership and a private entity to share the risks and rewards of delivering or enhancing an essential public service. The PPP agreements that I have partaken a role in were for projects that were necessary for developments to be successful and always to benefit our citizens. Parking garages downtown were created to offer free parking spaces for the public, especially for those who use the Bush Convention Center, downtown events, and residents living in the lofts apartments. A second parking garage was also built downtown to offer spaces to local downtown business, hotel parking, and free public parking. During my terms as mayor, we identified projects early on as we knew that prior to revitalizing downtown parking was going to be essential. Our council acknowledged from the beginning that it would be extremely expensive to construct these garages on our own and truly almost impossible. By partnering with other businesses to help pay for these garages, it became a win-win situation for multi-use. Public-private partnerships require dual structuring and revenue opportunities. There are other qualitative factors that make a public project successful when partnering with a private partner, such as transfer of risk, access to capital, speed of delivery, and development expertise. Two major PPP projects under my leadership that required private partners to make them successful include Centennial Park and the City of Midland's wastewater treatment plant. Centennial Park came to fruition after I had made the decision with City Council to purchase the county courthouse and implode the non-historical building. The City Council agreed to turn the almost 4 acres into a community park. Discussions soon led to partnering with private partners, county, and organizations to build a state-of-the-art downtown green space containing numerous amenities for Midlanders and surrounding communities to use. Private funds, along with public funds, were raised to design and build the park. In addition, endowment funds were raised and will continue to be raised to ensure the park will always be maintained and operated professionally. A second project with a PPP agreement that offered a tremendous amount of relief to Midlanders was the wastewater treatment plant upgrade with Pioneer Natural Resources. During my term as mayor, the city organized a team comprised of council members, city attorney, city manager, and utility director to work with a team from Pioneer Natural Resources. The City of Midland was in a desperate situation to update its waste facility. As mayor, together we worked with council and city staff identifying all financial options to address these very expensive upgrades. Pioneer approached City of Midland about entering into a PPP relationship. Pioneer agreed to pay the $134 million in upgrades to the plant, and in return, Pioneer purchases the City of Midland's reclaimed water at a discounted price. Ultimately, the forward thinking from Pioneer and the City of Midland utility managers determined that this private sector partnership produced a win-win scenario. It's important for the mayor to promote and encourage projects of these sizes and value through a public and private lens to ensure they are fair and viable for both sides. With high inflation, higher interest rates, and the lack of inventory on the market, it is imperative now more than ever to not have blinders on. Midland and the Permian Basin will continue to expand in various areas. The private-public partnership agreements in the future offers the opportunity to replace aging or deteriorating infrastructure, parks, public safety needs, and to also promote innovation and creativity. Sharing risk with private partners lessen public sector budget constraints.
Narrow-angle glaucoma calls for surgery. Dear Dr. Roach, my eye doctor told me I'm in danger of an acute attack of narrow-angle glaucoma and that I need iridotomy in both eyes right away. He also said this may be related to my headaches. I wanted to get a sense of whether to go ahead with it pretty quickly or to possibly get a second opinion. Since this ophthalmologist is new to me, I'm kind of nervous about it since it seems that only about 65 of folks are cured, with others sometimes needing a follow-up surgery later on. GM. Answer. Glaucoma is a disease of the retina, most often associated with elevated pressures inside the eye. The fluid inside the eye is the part of the eye called the aqua humor, drains through structures in the eye called the trabecular meshwork. In some people, the flow of fluid in the aqueous humor is limited and can even be completely obstructed by the root of the iris, the colored part of the eye, causing very high pressures and an immediate threat to sight. Unless the pressure is relieved, vision can be lost permanently within hours. I have had patients who have been told they need laser surgery right away to prevent acute closure, and I have always advised them to get the procedure. The procedure uses a laser to make a tiny hole in the iris to allow fluid to go through, even if the angle closes the trabecular mesh. This prevents an emergency from happening in the first place. Moreover, people like you who are at risk for acute closure of the angle may gradually develop vision loss they don't even realize. Since the vision loss in glaucoma is at the periphery of one's vision where it may not be noticed. Finally, doing the laser iridotomy before scarring occurs gives a better prognosis, making it less likely to need daily medication afterward or a follow-up surgery. 90% of people treated early did not need medication or follow-up surgery in one study. Until you get surgery, you should avoid medicines that contain warnings for people with glaucoma. This especially includes cold medicines with pseudoephedrine, Sudafed, and similar decongestants, some antidepressants, and other antihistamines.
This is the Dear Abby column. Man can't get his wife to church on time. Dear Abby, punctuality is important to me. My husband has many great qualities, but punctuality is not one of them. We have been married 20-plus years, and after many discussions have not been able to come to agreement on this. We are late to church almost every Sunday, and to most parties and family events. I think it's rude to keep people waiting, and it gives me anxiety. I have tried taking separate cars, but think as a couple we should arrive together. It seems like when I try to urge him to hurry, he purposely slows down. It has reached the point where we are angry at each other by the time we finally arrive anywhere. Any advice? Signed, Hare, married to Tortoise. Dear Hare, yes, take separate cars. No one cares whether you arrive together or not, unless you are going to a dinner party. And if your husband will be late for that, assure your hosts that it isn't necessary to wait for him to arrive. To the extent you can, try fudging the event time. But until he suffers the consequences, his behavior will not change. Dear Abby, my fiancé has been married twice and insists on maintaining contact with four prior sexual partners, other than husbands. Most of the contact is by Facebook, instant message, and cell phone. But one former partner is a high school classmate she sees every year at class get-togethers. I think what she's doing is inappropriate, and will certainly be so after we are married. She insists they're just friends, and I'm being immature and untrusting. She's adamant that she is unwilling to cease contact with these former sexual partners, now friends, under any circumstances. What's a guy to do? Signed, Crowded in Florida. Dear Crowded, a guy either accepts what his fiancée is telling him, that these old flames are just friends now, or he terminates the engagement and starts searching for a woman he believes he can trust. Dear Abby, my husband and I have been good friends with another couple for more than a decade. The wife has a degenerative illness and is now paralyzed and unable to feed herself. We would love to stay close with them while recognizing the problems they face in planning meetings. Now, at our infrequent get-togethers, it always ends with, "We should get together." But then no plans are realized. I know there's intense pressure on the husband between work, care of their teenage child, and health care for his wife. How can we tactfully stay in touch and, at the same time, relieve some of the pressure on the husband? I'd love to set up a bi-monthly coffee or lunch, but I realize some days the wife may not be up for it. Signed, Good Friend in Maryland. Dear friend, you are a good friend and a caring one. Every caregiver needs an occasional break so he or she can recharge. It would be a kindness to call him and offer to be with his wife for a few hours so he can spend some time doing things for himself that he may have postponed. I can't promise that he'll take you up on it, but he may. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.